Welcome to,
or welcome back to,
Dark Room Reviews. My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
And this week we have a very special guest joining us, our friend...
Andy.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Alright, so our episode this week is the 2019 psychological thriller, Saint Maud. This is a super strange but very interesting film, and we've got lots going on. So let's dive right in. Okay, you might be asking, who are we? Or you're not, because you listen to us all the time, right? Right? Yes? I'm Ginger. I'm the, like, self-proclaimed, like, horror movie buff. And I can officially say that I'm a pilot again by day, a horror film person by night. Woo!
Well, as of August.
9th.
Specifically.
So, yeah, I'm the one who loves the movies, and I usually am the one who's all like rah 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 about them. And Matt is the Debbie Downer.
Yeah. You can hear the laugh in the recording. Yeah, I'm the one that's like, oh, they did this interesting thing with the scene cuts. I'm the buzzkill.
He was the first one when we were talking about this
to say,
oh, they had that interesting thing about the sound, and me and you were just like, yeah, no,
oh, the storyline's
cool.
Great, the movie's great.
Yeah, this is all about the story, and then we've got all this really great like visual stuff going on, and then Matt's like, yeah, there was sound.
Good sound quality, I really liked it. So that's me. That's what years of film and TV sound engineering training will get you.
So the reason that we asked our friend Andy to join us on this one is not just because he also really enjoys horror movies, but you were actually the one that directed me to watching this one.
Well, yeah, I was so turned on by this movie just because in no way or shape or form were the other movies, Hereditary and Midsommar, are any kind of trilogy of any sorts, but they're all produced by the same production company, which
yes.
I am so turned on by those first two movies that when I found out this movie was being put out, I had to see it.
Yeah.
And the visuals from the movie alone and the direction that I was seeing from the storyline and the trailers, I just knew that this is something I needed to see. And then when I finally watched it, I was like, you guys have to see this. Because I know you guys like those other...
review on it.
Well, yeah, because I know you guys wanted... You like those first two movies that I mentioned, and they were so good. So you had to see it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad we did, too, because it's like... I didn't know how I felt about it the first time watching it, but after seeing it like again the second time, I'm like, no, it's really clever. Like, it really has some stuff going for it. Yeah.
So, just to give you a bit of background on this movie, Saint Maud, it was released in 2019, hashtag COVID release, although I think it came out just before.
Yeah, it came out just before.
But a new director by Rose Glass actually had won a bunch of awards in the UK for, you know, Best Emerging Director. So really interested to see what her direction is going to be. And this was actually her very first feature.
Mm-hmm.
So not bad for your first feature.
Yeah, this was amazing for a first feature film.
Yeah.
Although that's really similar, though, to our other favorite director right now, Ari Aster, where Hereditary was his first feature film.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So this does star Morfydd Clark.
Morfydd
Clark as Maud and Jennifer L. as Amanda.
Yeah, and that's really like, those are your two main characters. Everybody else, like everybody
really
else
focus
is credited.
On anyone else, but those are the two main characters for the storyline aspect.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'll be wondering why there's only two people. What's going on?
No, there's two people and God.
Or is there?
Or is there? That's the whole thing.
That's the whole point. So starting off with the opening of the movie, so just overall, before we get into like the scene specifics, overall, the general shape of the movie of like not really knowing exactly what's going on really works well in this case.
Yeah.
I find the storyline really tends towards that, and they do a really great job of giving you enough info that it's creepy, you don't know what's going on, and you don't really know where it's going to go, but also like you just know something not good is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we open in a, looks like a hospital setting, and that definitely some shit has gone down because there's blood, and our main character is just sort of like crouched in the corner, but we don't really know a whole lot other than that. I like it. I like that there's not this, I'm a big fan of the less is more when it comes to those things in storyline.
You know, you've heard us before with, we hate, like, the first 15 minutes of, like, this is the exposition.
Exposition. It gets boring. People don't want to watch that. People just want to kind of, like, jump right into the movie. And I like this one. This is another one where, it dives right in, so... I like that. What did you think of the first scene?
Oh, I thought it was really good. I love the fact that we've got this character who's just sitting there and she's just completely stricken with emotion. Yeah. You're not even sure if it's grief, is it anxiety?
Yeah.
And she's just sitting there drowning in the corner, basically, in all of her feels. And and then you see, I think we cut to a corpse over on the table.
Yeah, a corpse on the table.
Yes.
Corpse on the table.
Yeah, so she's just looking over. So some shit's gone down.
Yeah.
We don't know if she's gone nuts and killed somebody or like if there's been a malpractice suit going on or if she's witnessed a murder. Like we have no idea what's going on. And then it just cuts from there.
Yeah. And then that's
all you get.
Yeah. Which is great. So that's really.
Well, and I don't know about you guys. I didn't really think it was going to be as psychological as it was. No. I thought it was going to be more straight up like horror, haunting, paranormal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that too going into it. And I'm really glad it went that route because it leaves you guessing the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on, what's real, what's fake. It's, anyway, it's very clever.
So now moving through into, like, the first few scenes here, you can see it's basically the same character we've already seen on the floor of what looks to be a hospital.
Who turns out to be Maud. She calls herself Maud.
Mm-hmm. You learn later that it's a different name that other people call her.
Yep.
And she's kind of almost narrating in the sense of a diary, so to say.
Yeah.
You overhear her saying that God has bigger plans for her and that she has a new posting and you're thinking, okay, so something has happened and now she's looking for new work. But you still don't really know what it is.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is the Coney Island reference.
Yeah, yeah. So they're in Coney Island, UK.
not in like the New York area.
Yeah, and the first time we saw this too, I was like, a little confused, like I had to look that up and be like, why are there so many British people at Coney Island? Because it has the same kind of like theme park thing going on. And I was like, oh, there's one there. All right. Yep. We did not know that.
No idea.
No idea.
So we learned that her new assignment is basically to be a live-in nurse.
Yes.
And taking care of this Amanda character who is palliative.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you know so far.
And you get like a very small background on Amanda. She was a dancer and a choreographer, and now she's got this terminal cancer of, I think it's the spine, right?
Lymphoma. Lymphoma, yeah.
Yeah. And so she's not really mobile anymore, and she's only like 49. So it's quite depressing, right? That's very sad. But they couldn't be more different.
Yeah.
Like Maud and Amanda are exact opposites.
You can tell right from the beginning she's getting set up in her room. She's like hanging crosses.
Yeah.
And part of me is always wondering the whole time, like, was she like this before? And also, what's going to happen now?
Right.
So, and Amanda's house gives me like really weird, like Bly Manor vibes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right?
But that's what I love about that.
I loved it. Yeah. It was like dark and the wallpaper was almost like green art, like deco kind of style. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really cool. It was beautiful.
Oh, it was. I thought it was so cool.
Like, creepy beautiful.
Creepy beautiful.
Yeah.
I loved it. But I would live in a house like that, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, it had that, like, it was giving me, like, serious, like, 70s vibes, but, like, English 70s vibes.
Yeah, and we also, like, all three of us discussed that, like, the film also has this oddly timeless feeling to it where you don't really know if it's modern, but then there is this scene later in the movie where there's cell phones and things, and you're like, oh, okay, it is present day, but it's just because of the way that Maud lives.
And the way that she kind of dresses for the job. And I mean, the patient she's looking after, Amanda, doesn't really have any distinguishable look.
Yeah, she's very, very plain, very modest. Like, just bland, boring, does not want to stand out at all.
Yeah. And so because of that, it doesn't really ground it to any particular time. And it's not really until much later that you're like, oh, this is like present day. Yeah. Anyway, it's clever how it's done.
I like the way they tell the story of Maud too, especially in this part, because it's more about, she's not telling things to, you know, move the story along, but they actually, for how short this movie is, they do give a lot of story background for Maud.
Yes.
Even in this, you can tell a lot about her personality. I think she mentioned something like, oh, well, I don't like those creative types.
Yeah.
It's just like little bits like that throughout the movie.
Yeah. And she's quite judgmental.
Well, and the one thing I found really interesting about her, too, was her take on her relationship with God. Like, she was talking, like, in her prayer, she... I mean, I've listened to people prayer before out loud, but in this way that they had her praying to God was that it was more of, like, a pen pal sort of thing. Yeah. It was a very weird and...
Like an open dialogue.
Yeah, a very intimate relationship. Like, God and her are BFFs now.
Yeah. Which... is kind of what she thinks in her head,
and then it
gets
a little further later, but...
Yeah.
So, of course, Amanda, because she's dying, is, like, trying to meet up with family and friends and, you know, trying to do these things before she goes.
Yeah.
And one time, the next kind of scene that happens is she invites this kind of man over to stay with her and kicks Maude out of the house. So now she's been ousted for whatever they plan to be doing at the house by themselves. Mm-hmm. And this is where you start to see some... weird interactions with Maude. And this is where you kind of get to clue in as to, like, okay, what's her deal? And kind of from this moment onward, like, I was always questioning, like, okay, is she thinking this way? Is it just in her head? Are these things really happening to her in the same way that she's seeing it? Because she has some strange interactions. So she's back at the boardwalk where there's this big, like, Coney Island sign. It's like an arcade beach boardwalk type of thing.
Yeah.
And this homeless person's, like, asking for change. And she has this very strange interaction with them where it's like, oh, God bless you, and like a prayer at the end of it. And the guy's like, what did you say?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, is this just how you normally are?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. So I think that since her whole conversion, I think like literally she sees God everywhere. And she I think she feels compelled to spread like that message everywhere she goes. Like, I don't even think she can help it.
Well, the one thing I found really interesting when she did that little spiel with the homeless man on the street was that she did, like, she gave him well wishes and her and the change, and then basically as soon as, like, it was over, she turned her back and basically made a run for it because she was almost embarrassed. It was almost like if a server dropped off some stuff but knew that the order was wrong and then was like, just no, I'm just kidding, sorry, bye.
Yeah, almost like she hasn't exactly found, like, her footing in that world yet. That's a really good, like, it's a really good take of that scene.
Well, and the other thing, too, I noticed when she was on her way out the door, she was mentioning to the friend that she's like, oh, I'm on my way to go visit a friend down at the docks or whatever. And he's like, oh, that's great. Have a good time. She's not meeting anybody. She's got no friends.
No. This girl does not have friends.
No. Be difficult.
Yeah, this girl is... Well, and like we were saying, too, it seems like... And there's some later scenes where we'll get into this, but it does seem like... she has never had friends and she's always had a difficulty connecting. Mm-hmm. And we do think that this is one of the major reasons why she's so hooked on God, right?
Yeah.
Is that she has like latched on to this thing and it's like, this is how she feels connected
to anything.
The only thing that she's
grounded in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So now she gets kind of called back. There was a bit of a break, something was thrown against a wall. Things kind of got out of hand with Amanda and the person. So Maude got called back.
Amanda is quite the partier. I think you get the impression that in her day before she got sick, Amanda was probably quite the partier, quite the drinker, big social life.
And if you
could
think
of
anyone that is the complete opposite of Maude, that is Amanda.
Amanda.
Well, even just in the way Amanda's dressed, like she's got these like very like
glamorous
kimonos, like something of like, you know, Hollywood glam kind of stuff.
Like, she's dying and yet she's still looking like glam AF.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, after Maude comes back and starts taking care of her, she's starting to take out her eyelashes and stuff. She's got a nice, like, beautiful wig on, and then she switches over to this very elaborate turban afterwards. Yeah. It was just like, oh.
It's like, oh, man.
Yeah, Amanda's fabulous.
Yeah. Amanda is fabulous. That's the thing. And Maude is the exact opposite. Yeah.
And you start to learn, too, like, because Amanda starts talking to her about, like, Maude's background, what she's doing. And again, they do it in a very nice way that's not very exposition-y.
Yeah.
And you still don't even get a ton of answers from Maude. If anything, you get more confused by what Maude says because she's like, oh, I used to work in a hospital. I left for a change of scenery. It wasn't really for me. And that was her kind of beginning of, like, oh, I found my relationship with God.
Yeah.
And you're like,
Mm-hmm.
How did that occur?
And so then, for you guys, I don't know for you guys, but I was immediately thinking back to, oh, this has to have something to do with the first scene, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's probably the only reason why they stick that in there, is so that you know, it's not just that she you know, had a revelation where she's like, oh, I'd like to change my life and, like, get connected with my faith or something. No, no, it was, like, a big thing.
Yeah, she was propelled.
Yeah, like, propelled into it. Like, something
so
happened.
Far that she even mentions that I can feel God. I can hear him. God. I can talk to him. And you're like...
And Amanda, I really like that, like, Amanda, like, questions that, too. Mm-hmm. She's like, so wait, you can hear him?
Well, like, the one thing I actually have it written down, because when the way she describes the way God feels to her is that sometimes it feels like he's physically in me or around me. It feels like a shiver, like he's pulsing, it's warm and he's good, but he's always just there.
Yeah.
And it's just like this kind of like really weird and almost naive but wholesome approach to it. But also, if someone said that to me on the street, I would be a little like, okay, you're crackers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, immediately, I'm so glad that you have the quote there too, because I remember when I heard that in the film, I was like, she's nuts. Like, that is, you're Cracker Jack. Like, that is crazy. Mm-hmm. Because, like, well, and you're right. It does have this weird, wholesome vibe to it, too, where you're like, oh, you're so innocent. Like, you actually think that that's...
You precious thing.
You precious little thing. Like, you
believe that's how things work.
You really think that that's what's going on. And I think that's exactly what Amanda is thinking. She's just kind of like, oh, you... Like, sad little...
Yeah, she did have that look on her face at one point where she just kind of cocks her head to the side and kind of goes, oh, that's adorable. Like, you think you feel God.
Yeah, like, that's so cute. And you can just tell that Amanda is probably like the rest of us who are just like, you can't possibly think that this is exactly how it is. Look, you can have... Look, you can have your faith and you can have all that, but, like, describing it in that way is odd.
Yes.
It's really odd. And if somebody described it to you that way, like really, for real, not in a movie setting, he'd be like, I think you need to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be concerned.
Yeah, you need to speak to your local priest about this.
Right. Like, you need to speak to your local somebody.
Hopefully they're also a therapist.
Or doctor. Yeah.
But to, you know, buzzkill the storyline, I am going to mention about the use of music here.
Oh, man.
How many minutes did I make it? Three? I don't even know.
You made it pretty far.
I did.
It
was
like 10, 15 minutes. Yeah, good job.
But they do use more of an electronic score, but I actually don't dislike it in this case because the rest of the movie does make use of source music. So, like, they use normal music when it's supposed to be, like, a dance scene or, like, they're outdoors or they're having a party, which really works, and it doesn't seem to be, like, written music for that. It seems to be just, like, whatever
any
they had.
Music, yeah.
But I also do like that you only really get music when it's Maud's dialogue or what Maud is seeing.
Yeah.
Or if it's something where you're not entirely sure if what is happening is real or just through her own eyes. And that's kind of the main, like, psychological thriller aspect of this movie is that when there's score, 9 times out of 10, it's either happening to Maud or it's a vision and or partially real thing that she's seeing.
Yeah.
And there's a scene kind of coming up where another character gets involved, but there's always these hard cuts where, like, Maud will be enthralled in something that's, like, very religious, and someone in, quote, the real world comes in, and that, like, cuts out the music on a hard cut.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. Like, the silence does almost work better than having the constant music.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and another thing they make use of, too, are these weird flashback scenes. I think we got one of the first ones here just after with Amanda, where she... it's coming up a bit later, but we'll get to there in a second. So, as we know, Amanda mentions, like, after this, like, Amanda gets her own thoughts of, like, you know, because she's dying and what's going on. And, you know, almost is kind of playing off what Maud is saying. And this is where you get, like, the first weird experience where she feels like she's had, Maud feels like she's had this connection with Amanda.
Yeah.
And she's now, like, thinking that her whole purpose is to, like... This is why God has put me here. You don't really know exactly why yet, but to her, she's figured it out.
Well, Amanda says to her, like, you're my little savior, and you can just see that look of ecstasy on her face. It's just going, oh my, like, God, I'm a savior.
Yeah. And whereas Amanda...
Yeah.
And I think Amanda's meeting it in a more condescending way, and I kind of like that, like, Amanda's having one conversation, and Maud is having a totally different one.
Oh, yeah, like, she's just... completely just in awe and shock and just like she just like she you can tell she's starting to get tingle feelings.
Oh yeah.
Well, that probably is what caused the lights to flicker, right?
Yeah. Right? Yes, exactly.
So this was the moment where I was like, paranormal movie?
Yeah, I know. I had a moment too where I was like, this is why it's so good. It keeps you guessing.
So the lights start flickering on the next scene here because Maude leaves after talking to Amanda, and the lights just kind of like dim on, kind of like on and off, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And she then like kind of heads upstairs to her room, but has a really hard time walking up the stairs.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is happening? And you're like very labored breathing, and then does this weird kind of collapse at the top of the stairs, and you're like, what? Orgasm?
Yeah. But that is it. That is exactly what it is. So
yeah, she's like kind of combing through her hair, sort of. Like she's in complete absolute ecstasy, just all over the stairs. Like,
yeah.
Somebody's got to get a mop.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think the creepiest thing about it is like the next morning, she has like just the one liner. She's like, thank you, Father. And you're like,
oh, that's creepy. So, Andy, in the article that you sent me about this, which was super interesting, I was reading about that first particular scene, and that was the director's idea to give the audience something to relate to Maude with. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise the director was concerned that Maude would not be relatable in any way, because most people, even religious people, aren't religious like her. like this is not something that most people experience. So that's with the whole, like, she actually called it a godgasm. And the reason that she called it was that because she was like, well, this will be an adult audience watching the movie. And most adults over a certain age have experienced that. So it'll be a way if they can actually relate to, like, oh, that's how Maude feels after she's talking to God. So it was a way to like ground you to understanding just how crazy good Maude feels. And you're like, oh, that's really clever. I thought that was like really interesting insight.
Yeah.
To the whole thing.
How to convey that to an audience.
Right? Because otherwise, like, because how would you relate to her otherwise? She's such an unrelatable character.
The one thing, well, I mean, for certain people, like, I mean, as a person who went to Bible camp for many, many summers.
Hi, I was raised Catholic, so
Yeah, so you know those people who were a little bit more in touch with God.
Yeah.
Than others were.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was a really great way of grounding two different types of people together. Because I'm sure there are people who are out there who feel that they felt God's intervention in them.
Presence.
Like any of that. Like, there's people out there who absolutely will 100% swear by that they felt it. So,
but it but not quite as, like, in-your-face physical, right?
Well,
like,
yeah, because, I mean, taking something so sexual and then taking something so religious and connecting the two, like, I'm sure there's a few people out there who did see the movie who are a bit on the religious side who are a little bit offended by that. But everybody feels God in their own way.
Right. Apparently. Yeah. And, like, you know, the way that I feel about that is, like, you know, you weren't raised, with any kind of religion. I was. And, like, I think that the way that most people take these things is that most people have a faith in things and they believe certain things, and that's fine. And everybody's entitled to that. But, like, very few have this kind of, like, visceral reaction, right? Anyway, I thought it was really good.
Yeah,
but that does come from somebody who did, you know, I was around, like, church setting growing up. What did you think as, like, somebody who is not at all religious as a child?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I thought it was an interesting connection there. Mm-hmm. You could have told me anything and I probably would have bought it.
Yeah.
Because I've been like, oh yeah, this is some type of way of connecting it. But I mean,
this is a typical Sunday.
This is how I spend my, is this what church is like?
Grandma's having another orgasm again.
Yeah. Oh, damn it.
Can't you go to buffet later?
No, but I mean, for me, I guess I never really had that connection with it to begin with. So if you told me it connected to anything somewhat more biologically,
something tangible,
physical, like,
that you
I could have bought it.
Yeah.
But to put it to that extreme, I guess, really puts it in perspective to someone that's like, oh, this almost makes it more realistic as to why someone would continue this type of behavior.
Yeah.
If this is the type of reaction that they're associating it with.
Yeah.
Of course they'd believe it.
Right. Well, so, I mean, that is the idea behind, like, why people do engage in, like, in sexual behaviors. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, honestly, if it wasn't people that would have died off years ago, right? Like, if it wasn't for, well, and that's the weirdest thing, yeah. right? I know that's the strangest thing to think about, but, like, that's actually...
It's evolutionary.
Yeah, like, evolutionary lie, the reason that it feels so good is mm-hmm. so, like, because yeah, evolution wants yes. you to keep doing it,
yes.
right?
Yes, yes. Rewards.
yeah, rewards. It's just so funny. Mm-hmm.
Well, evolution's plan is for babies. Maude's plan is to save Amanda's soul. Yeah, that segue? But, so... After she has this mind-blowing orgasm from God,
yeah.
she's reaffirmed that her goal now, mm-hmm. her guide from God, is to save Amanda's soul.
Yeah.
And that's kind of her now new thing.
Yeah.
And so she kind of has these moments of, like, kind of planning, and you can kind of see she has these, like, brief sensations of, like, oh, it's starting. Mm-hmm. She's going to have... Just right all over the kitchen table floor there.
Yeah.
And this is where we get introduced to, isn't it Carol?
Carol.
Yeah, Carol's yeah. the new friend, air quotes.
Air quotes,
that
yep.
shows up, and, you know, she starts having, now we're starting to see Maude have some different visions. So she has yeah. not only just these very physical reactions, mm-hmm. but now she's starting to see, I think she's washing her hands and it's like blood is in the sink.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, that's a little weird.
And I'm sure that, like, for me, the way that I took that is her, like, physical representation of her inner judgments of Carol and Amanda. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't approve, right, of Amanda's, like, lifestyle and her choices.
Well, I don't think it's quite apparent at this point in the scene that
yeah.
there's something going on between Carol and Amanda, but...
No, but the next day...
The next day, it's yes. obvious,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Carol stays over, and you can see that Maude opens the door to, like, bring breakfast, and she can see that Carol's there, and you're like, okay, well, that's what's going on there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing here is now Amanda starts praying with Maude for the morning.
Yeah.
Which you're like, okay, fine. Let's see how that goes. Mm-hmm. So my whole question here has been, like, is Amanda actually believing it, or is she just like, I'm dying, it's fine, I'll take her for a bit of a spin with this?
Yeah, okay, so, like, my impression of it wasn't that Amanda was outright lying, although we do find that out later, but my impression was that Amanda was just trying her hardest to see something different because she's dying. Like, that's kind of how I interpreted it. It was like, well... You're dying anyway. You might as well, like, give this a try.
I almost thought that there was a kind of, like, a brief attraction almost like, from Amanda to Maude. Because she was looking at her like she could almost, like, I could corrupt you sort
yeah,
of thing.
That's yeah, that's true, too.
Like, lure her in over to the dark lesbian side.
Right.
Yeah. The damn dark lesbians.
I know. Dark-sided.
You're like, you never get Maude to that side.
No. God, no. But it's really interesting watching them sitting there having breakfast, lunch, whatever, and then Maude prays for her and says, pray for her body as her body is able to do amazing things, but it is failing her. Mm-hmm. And then also for her mind, because it's shrouded in darkness.
Yeah.
And you look over and then the camera pans over to Amanda and she just kind of raises her eyebrows and kind of like, okay, like mm-hmm. that's a little quip at me. All right.
Yep.
And then Maude starts to kind of sit there and start go through one of her little gargas.
Yeah,
yeah, well, and then but then the crazy part is Amanda starts falling over and the two of them fall back on the couch in ecstasy.
Yeah, yeah.
And like we're just sitting there like, is it actually happening? Is like, are they actually feeling it together? Or is like Amanda faking her out? Or are they like, is Amanda trying to turn her on and like diddle her or something? Like,
I know.
Well, and then the next day, doesn't she wake up like in the bed? Maude wakes up in the bed with like no pants on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she
like,
does.
And I was like, did something happen? Did it
and
not happen?
And
you never
and
know.
It might have. You,
yeah.
You don't know.
You don't know. Like, that's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. I think they leave it open for interpretation anyway for that exact reason.
The weird thing, though, is Amanda, quote, says she can feel it, too. And this is where I'm like, okay, is it just a ploy to kind of, like, mess with Maude?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought. But then, you know, the way this movie goes, you don't really know.
I know. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what makes it so good, is that the whole time you're questioning, like, maybe there is something paranormal insert thing here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we start getting,
Maude's
like, the
not
first...
just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, but she is.
Yeah.
we start getting the first of the flashbacks. So I think she's waking up in bed, and you start to see different things that had happened with, like, Carol and the hospital, and, like, Maude kind of has some flashbacks there. Yeah. And you can see that it's all kind of, like, music's ramping up, and then finally it just hard cuts when she sees the book.
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, the gift that Amanda gave Maude mm-hmm. was this book that she dedicated, quote, to my savior.
Yeah. With, like, the angel wings.
The angel wings on it.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right. And then she opens up the book a bit later, and you're like, okay, so it's all just, like, religious shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just pictures of different things. And this is another scene where she's kind of, like, going into a trance-like thing, and Carol cuts in and interrupts
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
So, like, really good use of music there, where they can actually, like, start the scene and then just hard cut, like, oh no, back mm-hmm. to reality, mm-hmm. that was not real.
Mm-hmm.
They do a really good job of that in this movie, where you kind of have, like, a difference between the reality world and Maude's kind of, like, fantasy, I'm going off to religious land.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
Which is really good, because then, especially later in the film, where it's kind of more thriller-esque,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
it's kind of more constant, so you're like, okay, is this all crazy? Right? Is it actually happening? Yeah. You don't really ever know.
It's hard to tell. Like, for sure the lines are blurred pretty good there.
Absolutely.
So, and now, of course, Carol's back. They're having some fun times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the weird thing. So this is the first major thing where Maude now, like, confronts Carol to stop mm-hmm. seeing Amanda.
Yeah. I kind of saw that coming.
Yeah.
Personally. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of see that Maude's judgment ramps up quite a bit. And, yeah, she's pretty ballsy.
Oh, yeah. She takes that right ahead. Like, no, she doesn't waste any time. She just cuts to the chase.
And just, like, asking her, like, don't come around here, don't see her again.
And like the quote it's afterwards, like, where, like, after that whole scene happens, her little inner dialogue is like, well, that seemed to work better than expected.
Better than expected, and it's like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, like, and then what I found was really interesting was that she immediately notices, like, Amanda's progression towards health. Like, she's like, she's so peaceful now. Her phone hasn't gone off in a whole day. And she's, and, like, one day later, like, I've basically saved her. She's at peace now.
Yeah.
Like, she's on her path onto the light. And, like, I've made everything better now by sending Carol away.
Yeah. And then, again, these are her, like, grandiose opinions of herself, God, how she saved Amanda, that whole mm-hmm. thing. Again, she'll take any sign that this is the right thing to do.
It's really cool that they kind of tie in the loneliness with everything, too, because you're kind of like, it's almost taking a stance, too, of, like, mental health. Like, oh, I'm finally with this person now.
Yeah.
Friendship, whatever it happens to be. But also the connection to God, that's another thing in her court. Like, I feel like it's a weird bunch of side tangents they happen to kind of pull into this one moment here.
Yeah.
Interesting thing happens up next, though, where she's now on the boardwalk, kind of after her whole revelation of saving Amanda.
Yeah.
And she runs into another nurse. So this is where I kind of like, because you're about, I don't know, maybe a quarter-ish, maybe a third into the movie, and you're like, okay, this is fine, but, like, what happened? Like, you still have some unanswered questions, like, what happened with the hospital? What's going on with Maude? Because clearly it can't just be she takes care of this person and she saves it and that's fine. Happy ending.
Right.
So, because you're like, okay, where is it going? And this person calls her Katie.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, everyone's called her Maude. She calls herself Maude and everyone's called her Maude in the new facility. And you realize that this person that's kind of talking to her on the boardwalk in the street is an old coworker from the hospital.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so she did work at the hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also like that when this girl's having the interaction with Katie, Maude, that she also kind of makes mention to, she was surprised that Maude was still nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, okay, so maybe more went down at the hospital that was like something that Maude caused, mm-hmm. right? And that's the thing for me that I was like, oh, okay, I think that's when it was starting to turn for me, thinking, like, okay, she's probably just nuts. you know? Like,
I definitely saw at that point that I was like, okay, this is more a mental health, more religious latch on something. A traumatic event had happened. This is kind of what sparked her whole thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know about you, Andy. What did you think about that?
Oh, like, I agree with you. It was a really interesting scene, like, having a referral back to the opening credits, or not the opening credits, the opening scene. where Joyce, her the acquaintance or the friend from work, is just kind of saying like, "I can't believe you're still working and like in, working in healthcare." And Kate, and she's like, "Does your agency know that you about the incident?" And Katie Maude is like, "Yeah, they totally do. They totally know that, you know, I screwed up and did something wrong."
And you're like, "Lie, that's a lie."
Yeah, we're like, so not only now we've got two lies here, so now we know that she's actually Katie.
Yeah,
and that she's. Under she could be possibly employed under false pre or under a false name, and that she's really trying to cover up her past.
Exactly.
And now too that she's also possibly murdered somebody,
right?
Whether it be intentional or malpractice, because now that's the other thing I was thinking too about the beginning. It's like, so wait, was she always religious at the beginning?
Right.
Did she kill somebody in the name of God trying to save them?
Right. It really,
like, is this a pattern? Like, is she some kind of like crazy religious serial killer?
Yeah. Like it really starts to make you think. Like, what is going on with her background? Yeah.
Head was spinning at this point.
Yeah.
And it's great because it doesn't actually feel like there's so many loose ends, because like you're just kind of following the storyline and it does have a fairly good pacing. So
yeah, it does. It does.
But now we kind of get some more drama, of course. Mm-hmm. What would this movie be without drama? You get Amanda is now, they're back at home and Amanda is just kind of laying around doing her thing. And she gets a phone call, which you think is Carol, but you don't actually know. Because immediately after the phone call, she's like pissed. She's like, "I don't want to talk to you. I'm going to bed." And you're like, "It's 5:30.
Yeah.
Going to bed. I can do what I want." And this is, so this is kind of next scene where she kind of has this weird flash moment of things. The flash has kind of come back, but this is an incident of her burning her hand.
Yes.
So right after she whisks Amanda away, because she is a little upset with Maude, she almost has these kind of cut scenes where she opens up the stove, like the burner on the stove, and like very quickly you can see like she, like you don't actually see her burn her hand.
Yeah.
But you can see she's like checking the temperature of the thing, and I'm thinking OCD, what's going on? And then it very quickly, you don't actually see her like burn her hand, but like she kind of pulls it away. And I'm like, what the fuck was that? Was that a weird like flashback? Is this a weird memory? And then in the next scene, like immediately after, you don't see anything.
No.
Like her hands, you can't really see her hands. You can't see what's happened. And this is another thing I do like about the movie is that they don't really reveal things until like two scenes later.
Yeah.
To kind of confirm whether or not it actually happened.
Yeah.
Because you'll notice during the shopping exposition for the party that they're about to have that now Maude has a bandage on her hand.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shit, she did burn herself on the stand. I'm like, what the fuck was that about? So I found that a lot of like interesting too. Like they don't, they show you a lot of stuff that may or may not have happened, and it's only these subtle details that you pick up during normal courses of the storyline that kind of hint you back to if it actually did happen or not.
Well, the one thing I thought from that scene was that Maude was kind of upset with herself because she knows that it's Carol on the phone, because you can hear her eavesdropping with Amanda on the phone. And I think she's starting to kind of realize, like, oh, shit, I'm losing my grip on Amanda.
Yeah.
She's falling, diverging from my path that I've laid before her.
Exactly. She's falling for the tempting Carol. Yeah.
So what my take on it was that because now Amanda's diverged from God's plan, Maude is responsible for that, and now she has to punish herself for it. So that's why she smashes her hand on the burner.
Yeah.
To inflict pain on herself because she let Amanda stray from the path.
Yeah.
I thought that's a very, you know, very interesting,
I know,
and an aggressive approach for, you know, someone slipping from the, from what you think is best for them.
And I know, like, when we were talking about this movie too, again, seeing it the second time, there was, I picked up more on it the second time. There was so much more of that super strict asceticism practice with the religion, which, like we were discussing earlier, just before we started this, was that, like, that's rare. That is really rare. There are people who are religious and they do practice, like, religious asceticism, but it's not even to the level that Maude practices.
Oh, God, no.
Maude is on a whole other crazy level. Oh, like, burning is not part of even normal asceticism. Like, I was telling you guys, normal asceticism for certain religions will be, like, wearing really irritating clothing, like, wearing, like, itchy wool, or wearing, like, shoes that are uncomfortable, or you know, not necessarily knowing where your next meal is coming from, right? So, mm-hmm. like, actually feeling hunger and that kind of thing. Yeah. But this is, like, she's on next level punishment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's some serious self-infliction there.
Oh, yeah. And it just ramps up.
And then it gets worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is kind of, maybe not my favorite scene, but, like, it's a pretty good one. Because this is, like, in, like, the first big twist, not twist, but big event that happens.
Yeah. So the birthday party.
The birthday party.
Yeah.
So Amanda has a birthday party, and, of course, she invited a ton of people, because, as you can already imagine,
she's social and has friends.
She's social, she has friends, and also it's probably going to be her last one, because she's terminal.
Yep.
And you can tell that Maude is, like, not thrilled to be there.
Yeah, Maude is, like, pissed.
And especially even more pissed, because at the beginning of the party, she sees Carol.
Yes.
And it's like, there it is.
And I think she's thinking, like, I thought I told you to stay away, and there she is.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, too, I think Maude's upset with the fact that Amanda has invited her, mm-hmm. despite Maude's,
stance on everything.
Yeah, exactly. And when she shows up, she just goes, oh, crap, I'm going to be in big trouble now. Like, they're actually hanging out.
Yeah. Then they bring the cake out, and I love how they kind of put Maude in, like, the dark corners of the room for, like, mm-hmm. the singing of happy birthday and everything. And this is where, like, that's not a big blowout, but it's like, okay, Amanda kind of lets loose on Maude, saying, like, look.
Loosen up.
That's kind of why I didn't feel these things. I kind of told her that, like, it wasn't really, like, I thought you just needed to have some more fun. Like, that's why I thought it was great that we could be together. Because, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have, like, normal things. Like, you don't know how much time you do or don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, like, kind of said that she got... Amanda's telling Maude that I think you got it carried away with the whole saving my soul thing. You just need to loosen up.
Yeah.
And they kind of make fun of Maude at the party.
Yeah.
Which was a little rude, but you can tell it really gets to Maude. They kind of, like, put, like, a napkin in the shape of, like, a nun hat on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember exactly what was said, but Maude then just proceeds to, like, hit Amanda across the face. Yeah, like,
full on smacks her.
Yeah, she basically, well, Maude, or Amanda turns to her and says, like, God's not real. Like, you don't actually feel him.
You
like,
don't actually.
Like, you don't actually feel him. And then, Maude just loses her shit. Gives her a big fuck you to the face.
Yeah, because, again, like, I think at this point we know, like, no, Maude actually does. Like, that is exactly mm-hmm. what she feels.
I also love Amanda's face after being hit in the face, because she's like, huh.
Yeah.
We really do believe all this shit? Yeah. Like, she's almost like... Oh,
she's kind of blown away.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you find out in just literally the next scene that Amanda doesn't even press charges.
Yeah,
like, no. I think Amanda's just kind of like, okay, whatever. I don't want her around, but, like, that girl's fucked.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's Amanda's take on it. She's mm-hmm. just like, that's
fucked. Of course, Maude gets pulled from the case, has a meeting with the employer. You know, normal HR things. Do you know about HR things?
Yeah, a little bit.
But I would say this is where things really ramp up, where you're like, okay, we're getting into the real meat of the situation here, and you still don't really know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, is this just going to be a series of, like, misfortunate events for Maude? Is this going to be a no paranormal thing? Is this going to mm-hmm. be, like, you don't know.
Well, that's, because we end up taking her back to the her home, where she is totally defeated. She's unpacking from her prior living arrangements, and, she knows she's upset with herself because she knows that she couldn't save Amanda from going on God's plan before she passes away. Because that's all she wants to do is save Amanda's soul before she passes away. So she basically ends up going on this, like, reckless
bender.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. And just engages with, like, different groups of people. Like, what I really enjoyed was her. At one point, she's in that bar, and she's sitting there, and she's looking over at that group of people, and they're having a full conversation, not including her at all. She has nothing to do with them.
She just sits there and starts
hysterically laughing, and look at her like, bitch, you're not with us.
Yeah.
Like, who is this crazy person?
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, how fucking creepy would that be if, let's say, we're out, we're at a bar, we're laughing, we're talking.
Someone at a table away from you.
A table away from you. Oh, totally alone, and they just start, like, laughing and giggling along, like... You'd have a hard time not giving them that exact look of being like, "Who the fuck is that?"
Oh, it's totally happened to me when I've been, like, in a public area, like a cafeteria or a mall or something like that. I've had people that are just absolutely out of their mind, and they just sit there and they're listening to your conversation. They start laughing. You're like, "You were invited.
No, it's like, this isn't for you. Go away now.
Doesn't even go here."
Yeah.
But, like, this is her attempt to be like, fuck you, I tried, why am I even bothering anymore? She, like, hooks up with one guy at the bar and then goes home with another guy from the same bar.
Yeah, first she's like...
Oh, and then there was the weird... I don't know, I was actually wanted to get your thoughts on the phone call with...
Joyce.
Joyce, or I think she goes by Joy later, but yeah, the friend that...
Mm-hmm. Yes, from the hospital.
Ran into her at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So... Do you think that Maude maybe, like, blew up on the phone call? Because it seems like, oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Like, because that's kind of the impression you get on the phone, is that, like, oh, did she really run into this person? Did she actually know them that well?
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out, like, a few days later that Joy actually comes to her apartment to check and see if she's okay. But that phone call kind of made it seem otherwise.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering what you guys thought about that phone call that she made.
Well, at first I thought, honestly... Joyce or Joy or whoever was just getting in touch to be like, hey, I like go back to the hospital where she works and be like, hey, guess who I saw on the
getting
street
the
other day?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You know, like workplace gossip. Sort
that
of
never
stuff.
Happens in aviation.
No,
right?
Not at all.
No, never.
So that was kind of my take on it at first because I thought, you know, maybe Joy was
getting
a little dirt, being like, oh, guess what? The girl that like killed somebody is still working.
Remember that nutso person that used to work here?
So I thought for sure like that was the case. Like it was a one-off thing. Like I thought we weren't gonna see her again.
Yeah.
But sure enough, like Joy actually
returns
later on and actually has compassion and says, like, you know,
I feel bad for you.
And like she actually, it sounded like they actually may used to have actually been
friends,
but not close, like maybe just acquaintances.
I think just work acquaintances, but I think she's still like taking some pity on her.
Keep in mind too though, she's also bombed off her rocker. Like Maude has been doing shots and like been drinking for pretty heavily
for
at this
hours.
Point in the evening.
Well, her beer has been causing whirlpools, so
well,
that'll do for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, she gets into that moment where all of a sudden, all the drinks in the bar start whirlpools just develop out of nowhere, and then she smacks into that guy that ends up taking her home.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool scene. I think that was just a scene that for Maude, it was the no, God's still here, and mm-hmm. you're fucking up.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I thought that was. Like, that was just yet another thing to be like, no,
and for me, I was thinking, like, is she going to go back, or is this going to turn into more, like, she's schizophrenic?
Mm-hmm.
Is this more going into, like, how's it going to go? Is it going to stay on the religious tangent? Is it going to go more, like, now she's on to something else?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, like, more hallucinations? Like, again, you don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
The weirdest thing was the scene right after where she has, like, the convulsions and she's throwing up and the whole, like, levitation scene. You're like, what the fuck
that
is happening?
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, too, though, right before that all happened, she goes home with that guy.
Yeah.
And then we start getting those flashbacks of
yes.
what happened at the hospital.
I thought that was
and
super interesting.
And she's having sex with this guy. She's riding on top of him. She's living her best life.
Yeah, and then
and
she's
then
like...
all of a sudden, like...
And then, like, almost giving him CPR, but you can tell it's not quite real.
Yeah.
And, like, she, like, has a vision or a flashback of, like, smashing through somebody's chest, right, during CPR. And you're like, oh, okay, what is happening?
Which, it means in some cases, because we've all had CPR training, we
mm-hmm.
know that when you break someone's ribs, you're probably doing it right.
Exactly. Yes. So, good job, Maude.
Yeah. I mean, not to the point where their heart explodes out of their chest like it did in this scene, and that
but
blood literally started streaming from his mouth. And,
you
I mean, that's a little, I think she was doing her...
A little too deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got the chest recoil a bit more before you push again.
Yeah, exactly. She was not listening to Stay Alive.
Oh no. Just a little bit too much pressure.
Yeah.
But then you also realize from the guy that she's with that, oh, you're one of the nurses. I've seen you before. And you're like, okay, so this is not your first rodeo, pun intended,
with that whole thing.
But you're also like, okay, so this is not the first time you've been through this. So what happened, and then especially with that whole thing with the scene where, you know,
busts
through his chest. You're
right?
Like, okay, it's not been good for you.
I mean, then you really get the impression that she was always a weirdo. Because then you kind of get, you're starting to piece some things together. You're like, okay, you probably never had friends. You've probably always been weird. But even before this, you were a heavy drinker
mm-hmm.
and probably desperately trying to, like, fit in and have friends and stuff. Or connect in some way, right?
Well, even the guy that she did sleep with, I'm pretty sure he did say, like, you had sex
you
with
had
one
sex
of my
friends
or whatever. Like, I used to see you down here all the time, and then you disappeared for a while. What happened
to
you?
Yeah, like, what happened?
And
yeah.
then she just runs out of the room because she's like, oh, crap, my cat, like, Katie Pass is catching up with me.
With my Maude present.
Yeah.
yeah.
I don't know. I think the Maud present I'd be more concerned about than the Katie past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all depends on your take of life.
Right?
Yeah.
Goals.
Goals.
Hashtag goals.
So then I think we get one of like the more really weird, compelling scenes back at her apartment.
The big trailer scene that kind of drew everyone into the movie.
Yeah.
Where she like washes her face, like is starting to see some stuff and isn't feeling well. I mean, with all the beer and shit she drank.
Yeah.
Throws up and is I think one of the things that she mentions is like, if this is how you treat someone that's been to God, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If this is how you treat someone that's been faithful to you, how do you treat people that shun you away?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is where she has her big, almost like revelation moment.
Yeah. Where she even says right in it, I've had a revelation.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like,
and that's what she calls it. And it's like, okay, she throws up everywhere, sick to her stomach, and then just like levitates off the ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's never happened to me.
Yeah. But it's almost weird too, because I thought she was. I don't know if it looked like to you guys, but was she in ecstasy or not? That was the one thing. Because was it one of her godgasms, or was it her just feeling the Holy Spirit or lifting her off the ground? Or I don't know. Like, what's your take on that?
I couldn't even tell. I honestly think that initially it was quite painful, and then I think it kind of like swapped over in a moment where it was like back to being more like one of the godgasms. And I think that's what made her wake up the next morning and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It reaffirmed everything, right?
Well, I'm wondering too, with like the significance, I mean, maybe I'm reading into this a little too metaphorically, but maybe with the significance of her throwing up was like her way of like expelling like the bile of her shitty choices.
The water overflowed and like landed on her face, right?
It was very much like a almost like a baptism or born again.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking. It was almost like she rolled over, and the next thing you know, she's just floating in the air, and she's suddenly reached this higher level of life that she's wanted to obtain. She's on the path again.
She's on the path again. You know that she's
been guided. She's seen the light.
Yeah. Divine hands lifting her up.
Mm-hmm.
And then she cleaned up all the Cheerios off her floor the next day.
Yes.
Yeah, as you do. Even though I don't think there were any there the night previous.
But you know.
Anyways. And this, now going back into the whole thing of like pain and punishment, this one's like one of the more hard ones to watch. Even though you know it's fake, you're like, oh, it just doesn't sit well with your mind.
Yeah.
The pins in the shoe.
Oh, yeah.
She like puts pins through a picture of a religious icon. I think it was the Virgin Mary.
I think it was one of the cutouts from, like, I think she was actually cutting out pictures from her book.
From her book. And I think that one was Virgin Mary, maybe.
You could tell me it's any religious figure. I believe you.
Yeah.
Anyway, but she was putting, so she's, like, pushing the push pins, like, through that. And she cut it out in the shape of, like, the rough shape of the person in the picture. But then also, I realized, oh, that's in the shape of a shoe, too. And I was like, oh, where's this going?
Yeah.
And then she puts it in her open, like, her little open Converse and... Yep, shoves her foot in there, and I'm like, oh, there it is. Okay.
And then she's like, the next scene, she's out in public. You're like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
And she is, and every step is just like...
stepping on glass. But I think that was the one thing, too, again, like how I think I talked about how, for her, with her godgasms, that pleasure was pain, and like how the pain was the only kind of tether to the real world, because otherwise like she had just get swept away.
She would
by
just
these,
like float away almost.
Well, she almost did. So maybe that was her way of saying like, I need to ground myself in order to be part of this world, because I don't think my work here is done.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, especially with the viewfinder scene that she had coming up, I was like, oh, she's looking for Amanda.
Yeah.
I kind of clued into that one pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. So she had to go back to Amanda.
Yeah. So that's, and then she then very briefly right after that, I think her quote is like, Amanda had called for me and I'm now answering her call type of thing. And I was like, oh, I don't think this is going to be good. So this is where I started cluing in, being like, okay, I think it's going to go what had happened at the hospital. Mm-hmm. She's going to think something and might inadvertently kill her or intentionally kill her. But again, you don't really know.
Yeah.
Oh, I never got... So, okay, what are your guys' thoughts on, like, the scene just after this where she, like, goes back to the harbor and, like, tries to talk to that nurse or worker on the bench?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my thing was that I think she was trying to see if she's been replaced.
That's what I thought, too.
So, like, from a job perspective, of course, this is the person who replaced her. But I think she was trying to see, like, was she replaced in, like, the connection?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Maude doesn't like it when she starts to say, like, how nice she was. And, you know, she's had quite a nice relationship with this woman. And I think that, like, really got to her because it was just kind of like, mm-hmm. oh, Amanda likes this other nurse, right? And I think she felt, like, jealousy and everything in that moment.
Well, I think, yeah, because she's trying to see if she's being, like you were saying, if she's been replaced and if whether this new nurse is leading her, or maybe she's also
hers. She's on this path.
Maybe
too.
She or like maybe we're both on the same path. Maybe we can all guide Amanda to the light. Or is she
viewing her down a path of, you know, dismay and darkness?
Yeah, exactly.
Because even like Maude's had the other instances of like, oh, don't let her drink as much. She really shouldn't be smoking. And you're like, mm-hmm. does it really matter at this point?
It's terminal cancer. Like, let it happen. You know what I mean?
Let her live her life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then after talking to the nurse, who wouldn't give her any information, she's just kind of like, oh, my name's so-and-so, and you are, and just like, walks off.
Storms
like,
off.
Okay.
Weirdo. She's so awkward. Like, they do such a good job at making Maude's character just unbelievably awkward.
Yeah.
Like, that's even more awkward than me.
Well, I think one thing I noticed, too, because there's that scene where she's about to approach the nurse. I don't know if you guys noticed, but her eyes were two different colors.
Yes.
One eye was blue and one eye was brown. Like, you can see now she's definitely going through the change.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, the physical change.
Yeah. And it's just, it's on another level. Like, we don't know at this point, is it actually happening to her? Is, like, are her eyes actually changing color?
Well, and the one scene that got me is actually right after this, where she wakes up in the middle of the night and this thing is just talking to her. And
That scene is
happening.
Freaky.
I think, was it a... It looked like a moth or something.
A
like
moth that. Bug thing. Because you can see the bug kind of comes out of the sink.
But isn't that like a representation of something of some sort?
Asking the wrong person.
Like, Ginger. Yeah. I can't remember. Was there any, like... I mean, well, you grew up Catholic. I grew up Protestant. So, I mean, we can have a debate about that later. But I just seem to recall... Was there anything in the Bible about...
I mean, there's all kinds of things about, like, rebirth and that type of thing. And that's the only thing that I can think of that people do think of moths and butterflies as symbols of rebirth, right? But as you know, that's huge in the Bible, is, like, Jesus's, like, rebirth and transformation. Yeah. So that's what made me think that it could have been a loose tie there.
Yeah. Well, what I thought, though, that was really interesting about that particular scene was that the voice that she started to hear was actually a distorted version of Morfydd Clark, the lead actress, who is actually of Welsh origins. And it's this distorted Welsh-English kind of conversation. So anybody that speaks Welsh out there, you'll love this movie. but they have this whole conversation where she's like, I'm not really sure what to do. Like, and the voice tells her, like, you've known all along. You know what you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And then she just wakes up the next day and goes, yep, this is the path. I have to go save Amanda now at any means necessary.
Yeah.
By her bedsheet robe.
Yep.
Bedsheet robe.
And then we have a costume change.
Yeah. I do like when you see people, like, every once in a while you see, like, the real world and you see people giving people, like, people will give Maude, like, the subtle, what the fuck, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they see her in this, like, bedsheet outfit and they're just like,
okay.
Well, she's even got the giant prayer beads on now.
Yeah.
Like, she looks like she almost has like
a monk.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's totally looking like a monk, basically.
Well, now we're getting a little bit of foreshadowing here because she wakes up, she puts on the whole thing, and just as Joy's coming back, there's the bottles of acetone and peroxide.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And you can tell she's kind of, like, looking around her room and is kind of, like, shocked by Joy being back.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, no, what's she going to do? I actually originally thought she was going to, like, light Amanda on fire.
Yeah.
That was my thing.
You mean Joy?
No, Maude was going to light Amanda on fire.
When Joy walked into the apartment, I thought Maude was going to light Joy on fire because she was just like, I'm going to make a sacrifice or something. Like, I don't know how that would have connected, but, like, she's sitting and she's looking at that bottle. I'm looking and I'm like, is she going to light her on fire?
She's going
to
do something.
I just remember sitting there, like, I was actually, like, hands on my head. Like, I'm, like, waiting for her to douse her in something and set her on fire.
And I thought Joy was going to be, like, an intermediary kill originally.
Yeah.
Like, I thought she was going to be like, oh, this is my plan to kill Amanda. And Joy got in the way, and I had to kill her too.
Or like, or she, or that Joy was going to discover something about Maude's plan,
and like,
or
confront her. And...
yeah, and then kind of go like, "You can't do this." Like, things got really escalated, but no, it was actually a really nice interaction between the two, where Joy says, "You know what happened at the hospital really wasn't your fault. It was an accident. Really, like, it would have happened to anybody." Well,
and you can tell that they tune out the rest of the dialogue. Like, until Maude is like going off into her whole world. The last thing you hear is, "We should have been there for you before it happened. We all knew something was going on."
Yeah, and that's where you're like, man, I wish we could hear what's being tuned out.
Yeah.
Because you know that there's some way bigger story. She obviously had some kind of psychotic break prior to that event at the hospital. And you're like,
originally,
I want to know.
I thought it was just the event, but then when she kind of mentioned very subtly again, like, "Oh, we should have known beforehand," you're like, okay, this has been like a long-term thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, I thought when she was prepping those bottles, because I wasn't sure if the water in the sink was...
I didn't think it was water.
I didn't think it was water. I thought it was like full-on like acetone or whatever.
Well, but you could see her, she was like blessing it. Like, she was doing like the like a whole, like a crucifix.
Yeah, later after with, with Amanda. Like,
and I thought that like, so when she brought... So, I mean, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but she goes to Amanda's house. And, I mean, she's creepy. She's creepy as fuck, because she is just, like, in her fucking robe outfit.
Next level shit.
Next level shit. She
lets herself in the door.
Lets herself in. And when she goes upstairs and she has the bottle in her hand, that's when I was like, oh, shit, she's here to, like... She's gonna like burn, like chemical burn this woman. Like, I thought that that's what it was gonna be.
Yeah.
And in her mind, I was like, I was thinking, oh, she thinks it's holy water, but really it's just like super harsh chemicals. I thought she was just gonna like end up burning Amanda.
Yeah.
Went in a different direction.
Well, and just before, after this whole tuned out conversation with Joy, Maude then mentions, her like, "Oh no, it's okay. I've been transformed.
Yes.
And I'm okay now. I know what's going on. I know what I need to do."
Yeah. I think she even says something to the extent of like, "Everyone will see how I've changed.
Everyone
like, the world will
see
how I've changed," or something like that. And you can just see, like, okay, she's, like, completely off her rocker now at this point. But, like, the thing is, though, it's so subtle. Like, nobody would... Like, everyone's like, "Oh, that's just quirky Katie Maude." Like, just being different.
Just being a weirdo.
Marching her own drum.
Now, this was the moment that I was like, oh, shit.
Was she right the whole time? Yeah.
So she confronts Amanda and is like...
Amanda's more sick now. She's in bed.
And she has this whole, like, almost apology. Like, "I was unkind to you. That wasn't right of me." But, like, things are now starting to get, like, a little bit more intense. Because now Amanda's like, "Maude, you just need to snap out of it. You and me are here. Like, just...
We're alone. No one else is with us.
You don't need to have this big, like... production of everything." And Maude is kind of offended. And then you see like Amanda's face get super fucked.
Like all contorted.
And like all the face is like stretched out and her voice has changed and is like screaming at her, being like, "You've lost your faith," all this. And you can hear Maude be like, "It's the devil." And you're like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What is happening?
For a minute, the first time you watched this, I was like, oh man, she's not crazy, and like this.
I'm like, it actually came to a head. Like, this is real now. We're like, oh no, we're batshit for crazy thinking that she was batshit crazy.
But
she gets like flung across the room. And like shit's toned down, and she then like stabs Amanda in the neck.
Takes the scissors and just stabs her like a shit ton of times. I loved the scene. I thought the scene was so well done.
Well, because then you can see immediately after she's like still like dying and is. Music's dying down, and they do the whole silence thing really well. And you're like, oh, no, I don't think that was how that happened.
Yeah, and then you just kind of see, like, it's just Amanda in the bed. She hasn't even really moved very much, and you're like, okay, so Maude has probably hallucinated that whole thing. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gets reaffirmed the next morning where she has grown her wings.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my god, this scene. Like, it's actually, like, I mean, okay, so from a visual arts background, the scene is so haunting, but so stunning at the same time until the very end. But when you see her kind of walking along the beach with these giant tanks of gasoline, and then she just walks over the beach and she's kind of singing this song in Welsh to herself, and she looks up into the sky above her, and there's this giant... swirl of clouds, and then there's glowing, and she's realized that you know, because she's had this epic holy battle against the devil.
And won.
Yes. Yeah. She won. Mm-hmm. She's looking up and she's like, this is my time. Like, I'm a saint now.
Mm-hmm.
And then douses herself in gasoline.
Yeah.
And then you can hear people kind of like screaming in the background.
Yeah.
But then she just looks out. And
super briefly. And when she looks, I love it. Like, when she looks out from her impression, it's people like literally worshiping her. Like, they're getting down on knees and like praying as she's like dousing.
The flick of the lighter is when like they all just kind of like fall to her knees in like absolute awe that they're witnessing this miracle. And like there's this orb of light that surrounds her, and then these wings come up, her eyes change color.
Oh,
she's absolutely euphoric at this point.
The whole scene is quite beautiful.
It is actually
like, it's
really pretty.
Stunning.
And
then there's that super brief flash right at the end where you realize that, oh no, she's just a fucking burnt ass corpse.
Yeah.
She was about to be anyway.
Yeah.
She's screaming. And she's just fully engulfed in flames.
Yeah, Gondor called for aid.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's
and
bad.
And it's like, for a split second, it's almost like the ending of Host, where it's like, at the last minute, comes out, and that's it. That's the movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you know, you're like, oh, no, she was nuts. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I do like how it leaves you guessing right up until the very last minute, until the last second where you're like,
oh. Well, yeah, because you can hear the screams of people. Like, they're absolutely horrified. And then you're like, oh, no,
she's
on fire. She's dead. Like, she is not even toast at this point.
No, she's
burnt toast.
She's burnt toast.
Yeah.
She's done.
Yeah. So, overall, I really did like it personally. I think they did a great job with the score. All the scenes are very well
shot.
The artistry is really well done. Like, it has a very independent, similar to Hereditary, very independent film feel while also having a more substantial storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And the psychological thriller aspect of it, where it is more psychological horror than like traditional horror.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keeps you guessing.
Yep.
You certainly don't know right up until pretty much that. You have your suspicions, but pretty much until that last moment, you don't actually know.
Yeah.
I love that there's not too much exposition. They give you very little to go on. And, like, it's just really well done.
Yeah, my only downside is it is a little, not predictable, but, like, you can kind of guess that she's crazy the whole time.
Yes.
I do like that they don't give it away entirely, but I wish, like, it had just a few more twists in it.
Where you were guessing a little bit more.
Where you're guessing just a bit more for a little longer.
Yeah.
But, again, I'm not mad at this movie.
No, I loved it. I thought it was great.
No, I'm glad you guys liked it so much, because the one thing and again, kind of going back to that, was it a trilogy? Because obviously all three movies are very, very different, but they were all released like one after another, and like they all have these really amazing female-led character plots, and I just went like, this is a really interesting character, especially in contrast to all three. But I felt, in comparison to Midsommar and Hereditary, I didn't love the story nearly as much as I did the first two, but it is an amazing story at the same time. Like, on its own, it's just, I kind of was hoping for something of that same kind of caliber, but of course, obviously, we have two very different directors, we have two very different storylines, and like comparing, I mean, it's really unfair to compare all three of them, but I did because they're all under the same production company.
Yeah. I think that for a first feature film from this particular director, and like the acting was phenomenal and the story was really good. Mm-hmm. No, like, I'm like you. Like, do I think it was maybe as good as like your Hereditary Midsommar? No.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it had similar weird theming where you're questioning things,
you can
where
really
you're going
appreciate
like,
it, right?
Yeah, and different. I just also, like, we've said this so many times too, but like, it gets hard now after like, you know, 100 years of horror films, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's all been done, right?
Yeah.
It's all been done. And these, like, these really original ones where you have to go, like, shit, that was like, That was an original story. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I really admire the amount of work that went into it. The art direction. I mean, like, that, I love the visuals of that. Like, I mean, I actually really enjoyed, like, when I was in high school, like, I actually was really, I took all the art courses and whatnot, and, mm-hmm. like, my big era of art was, like, the Renaissance period, and, where, like, you, like, it was a lot of, like, depictions of that with a lot of the artwork that we saw in Maud's book, and I love that stuff, and, like, all the soft pastels and stuff, like, it's gorgeous work, and, like, with the art direction to it, like I said, it had that kind of, if you've seen the movie Suspiria, it's kind of got that 70s kind of glaze over it, with that 70s vibe. I love that.
The colors and the tones and the brightening.
And the and the costuming too, like with like Maud's outfits, like as modest as they were.
Dated modest outfits.
Yeah, like it looked like something you pick up from like Salvation Army sort of stuff. Like just very strung together, very modest and, you know, not attention seeking. And then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum with
Amanda,
Amanda. So
who's
just
like feeling her fabulous self.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We love Amanda's outfits.
Yes. Yeah. So that was Saint Maud. That was our little wrap up. Now
everyone ready for scores?
Yeah.
Sure. All right.
So
this is the part where we're going to give a total score out of 100, and we're just going to flat out say what they are based on our personal opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be judging things like the story, the acting, any effects, music, sound effects, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So who wants to go first with their very first
I'll let you two go first, because I want to hear an honest opinion. I already have my score in my head, but I want to hear you guys first.
Okay. Go.
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
I'm going to get a solid 80. 80 out of 100.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
High for you.
Remember,
I'm more the technical element person, and this one really didn't have
this one
that.
Had
the storyline was unique,
great
acting, and, like, there wasn't any weird glaring sound issues.
Yeah.
The sound actually worked really well, in my opinion, even for a score, like, an electronic score that I'm usually not a fan of, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm landing on about an 85 for me. Again, like, loved it, loved the story. The story had me, and it was... For me, like, that uniqueness really gets me, where I'm just like, okay, that was cool. There was some little hints where it was, like, the predictability of, yeah, she's probably crazy, and then she turns out to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved for it to be, like, a little bit more difficult to guess, I guess. But, like, it was still unbelievably unique and interesting.
I agree.
Yeah.
So for my score, I would also say an 85.
Not to
follow suit with Ginger, but that was, it was good. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, art direction was great. The storyline was great. The effects on it, like when that one scene where she's like having another orgasm sort of thing, where her face is getting pulled to the side.
Yeah.
Like that was like, that's what really got me going. Cause I was like, what is that? Anyway,
it gave me flashbacks. I don't know about you, but it gave me flashbacks too of, what do you call it? Black Swan.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Black Swan, where it was very like, you're like, oh man, like you kind of know she's crazy, but you also think like
also,
something
like,
might
happened?
Be happening and like,
yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. But for me, it had all the elements of a great movie.
Yes.
So definitely for me, it's solid 85.
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
Definitely worth a watch. I would encourage that.
Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to take a little break from an actual movie review. So, you know, since this whole COVID thing, the new releases are pretty slow to come out these days. So we kind of have an idea to do our opinions on what makes a good horror movie.
And you probably already gathered what they are, but we'll put them in a concise episode for you.
Right.
Might as well. So thanks again for joining us here on
Dark Room Reviews.